Welcome back to our Queer Experience podcast. This is Andre. I'm joined by Bruce. And today we have a very special guest, Tom Goss. Bruce, tell us a little about him.
We do. Tom Goss is a very talented singer-songwriter joining us on the phone. We're very happy to talk to you, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
And I got to admit something real quick before we get started. Now, we've had a lot of guests on, and I don't normally like fangirl and stuff like that, but I respect your work, man. Like, especially while I was coming out, your music really did, it helped me and it affected me, and it's an honor to talk to you, man.
Well, I mean, I can't thank you enough for that. I mean, that's why I do it. So hearing comments like that is, you know, it's really uplifting to me. So thank you so much.
So on our Queer Experience, we like to highlight the diversity of everyone's personal experience, how they got to be the proud gay or lesbian person, transgender person that they are. So I was hoping we could start there with you. Do you mind telling us a little bit about, you know, your background, your coming out story, that
kind
of thing?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I'm not sure it's always kind of a linear thing, you know, right? But I grew up in Wisconsin, and I loved that. And I was an athlete my whole life, and I went to college in Missouri on a wrestling scholarship. And I think, you know, I think my experience in a lot of ways was what somebody would just call like a normal childhood. And I think that, you know, my parents had a really nasty divorce when I was in grade school, and I think that kind of really resonated with me for a long time. And I was pretty adamant, you know, even before I hit puberty, that I wasn't really interested in relationships, just because, you know, for me at the time growing up in Wisconsin, relationships meant children, and then getting married and having children meant possibly that I could damage a child as badly as I was being damaged. You know, it was, I guess in retrospect, it's weird to have that self-awareness at such a young age, but I remember consciously thinking that. And I was I grew up in Wisconsin, I grew up in the Midwest, but I didn't grow up in a family was like super religious or said anything about the gay community in a negative light. And so, you know, for me, I just kind of was like always doing my own thing. And I think in a lot of ways I really had just cut off kind of my sexuality, the piece of my sexuality, until post college. And in college, you know, I didn't date men and I didn't date women. I just kind of like did my own thing and really considered myself asexual more than anything. I just didn't really have that drive. And I thought that I either didn't have it or that people were lying about it, like exaggerating it. And then I decided I was going to be a Catholic priest. And I went into Catholic seminary and moved to Washington, D.C. from the Kansas City area. And I fell in love. And I fell in love with a man. And it was interesting to me because it was definitely like different than one had would expect. You know, I was an athlete and I wrestled a lot. So, you know, I was always in the locker room with 60 guys, naked, you know, beautiful, 18 to 22, you know, gorgeous bodies, earnest and Midwestern and everything that people find attractive. But for me, it just wasn't doing anything for me. And when I fell in love, I realized that I was just attracted to a different kind of person. And I never, you know, considered looking at that kind of person for my own sexual desire, which was kind of an interesting discovery for me, to discover that I like bigger men. And I just hadn't hung out with a lot of bigger men. And so I really hadn't had the opportunity to find that attraction and to find that love. And so for me, that was a really wonderful discovery to find out that I was gay and just attracted to bigger men. Because for me, being asexual was way more alienating than being gay. I couldn't really label it in any way, shape, or form. You just were kind of like hanging out there in the middle of nowhere, you know? And and so that was the beginning of my journey. And I left seminary, and that wasn't going to work for me. So after about a year and a half, I left. And I'm extremely lucky to say that 2 weeks after leaving, I went on a date with who would be my husband. So my husband is really the first person I ever dated, my first boyfriend, my first fiance, my first husband. I kind of have, like, the luckiest dating story you could imagine. And so for me, like, coming to terms with the pride in my sexuality and the pride in who I am in the relationship that I am has a lot to do with him, and has a lot to do with, like, the steadfast truth that my relationship and my same-sex experience has always been really positive, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense, what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No,
I mean, my husband, this is, like, just being straight up, like, my husband has healed me in more ways than I could begin to imagine. And so there's no way that I could look at that experience and to say this is a bad experience and have self-hate as a result of that, you know? Like, for me, it was, like,
yeah,
everything, healing and eye-opening and world-opening, and, like, everything was positive and great. And so for me, I want to scream that from the rooftops.
That is so amazing. I think for myself, at least, and I don't want to speak for Bruce, is, like, you've had this, all of this fairy tale experience, this kind of thing that I've always dreamt of. And so I'm sitting here in awe, and it's really cool.
Yeah, and in a way, it's like super, super fairy tale, you know? And I think a part of me, like, not dating anybody until I was 23, and totally turning that part of myself off, you know, allowed me to be super introspective and know who I was and enter into a relationship in a centered way. I have no idea. I don't know the answers. I can only speak to my experience. You know what I'm saying?
For sure. I do have one kind of off-topic question.
Sure.
So you say you didn't grow up religious, but you were going to become a Catholic priest?
Yeah, you know what's funny? When I was saying that, I was like, oh, that's a really interesting, like, contradiction. So I grew up in a Catholic family, so I mean, I don't know, it's like a run-of-the-mill Catholic family. I wouldn't say that they were super religious by any way, shape, or form, you know. I think,
like,
that
culturally Catholic,
you know, I'm sorry,
like culturally Catholic.
Yeah, like culturally Catholic. And so for me, like, again, like, I, you know, I felt like I was asexual. And what I really wanted to do was change the world, and I really wanted to impact people's life and work in ecumenism and interreligious dialogue and reconciliation. And so for me, I thought, oh, this is the best platform to be doing that work. And the thing that's really the deal breaker for most people is celibacy. Well, I was already celibate, and I didn't care. It was fine with me. So I thought this was a great idea. I was wrong, but it seemed like a great idea at the time. And it's funny, people always ask me, like, how I'm different. They must think I was, like, super different at the time. Like, my perspective in life was so different. And I think for me, my perspectives probably haven't changed that much. Just my plat speaking to people has changed, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's coming from a different framework, you know?
Exactly.
That's so cool. We've talked on this show about religion a bunch, so that's just, it picked up my eye, or my ear, rather. When you said,
yeah,
that.
Well, even me wanting to be a part of religion was to reconcile people with one another and with the church, and that includes gay Catholics and divorced Catholics. You know, I never thought, like, I never felt hatred for the LGBT community, even as someone who self-identified as not part of the LGBT community. I always felt like, man, those people should get this too. Those people should get whatever they want, regardless of their sexuality, you know?
Yeah. Jesus for everybody.
Yeah.
For everyone.
It sounds like it's probably more of a coincidence, but did you leave seminary because you met your husband? Or, I mean, your now husband?
Oh, no. I left seminary for a lot of different reasons. Well, it was mostly one reason. But it's kind of, like, Catholic seminary is crazy. Like, you can guess that it's crazy, and it is crazy. So, I mean, that's why I left. You know, it's not really a huge part of my story these days. But it was a horrible experience for me, and it was really traumatic. And then I left, and 2 weeks later I met my husband, who promptly healed me of all of that and all the damages that I and my family and my upbringing and my friends and my whatever's going on in my life, all of the, you know, we're constantly being damaged goods, you know what I mean? And he promptly healed me and worked to heal me of a lot of that stuff. So, you know, thank God, or I'd still be hanging on to that trauma, you know?
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
How long have you been
with
him now?
We're going on 13 years, and we got married
almost 8 years ago now. Congratulations.
Can I ask you about that experience? Because that sounds about the time, because you're in California, yeah? That sounds about the time that it was first legalized?
Yeah, so we were in Washington, D.C. at the time, and it was legalized in the spring of 2010, and we got married in the fall of 2010. So we had gotten engaged in the fall of 2008, and we're going to get married in 2009, but we're not very good at organizing. And so it took us 2 years to pull that together. And it honestly had nothing to do with the legalization, although that was a huge, like, plus. But but we got married on a miniature golf course in Virginia. So it actually wasn't legal for our big ceremony. But we just had a little quickie. We had a party in D.C. afterwards, and we had a little quickie second wedding, and it all worked out.
Nice.
That's awesome.
In Virginia, if I may ask. I'm from Maryland, and I lived in Virginia as well, so I'm just curious.
Oh, we got married in Arlington. We got married on a miniature golf course in Arlington.
Aww.
Yeah, so just in Northern Virginia. And then we, like, had these buses, and everybody got on a bus, and it drove up to D.C., and then we had dinner and a party. It was pretty chill.
Nice.
But it was really fun. It was really fun.
Aw, this sounds great.
Yeah.
So that mission to kind of, you know, heal the world and kind of bring that message of love and acceptance, is that kind of what inspired you to become a professional musician?
I mean, it's interesting. I do think that's a huge part of it. I mean, I don't think it's singular, right? I mean, I think for me, I've been drawn to music, and I'm drawn to the ability of art, especially music, to kind of transcend walls and, like, speak directly to people's hearts, right? It's like, it's amazing. I can say something and it doesn't mean anything to somebody, or I can hear something and it doesn't mean anything to me. But if I hear those same words or that same sentiment sung, or if I sing that same words or sentiment, it's impactful to people in a completely different way. And so I've always understood the power of that, and I've always really thought it was an amazing way to communicate and an amazing way to heal and connect. And, you know, I think I've always been a little, I don't know, disillusioned by the message that most often being communicated with popular music. And so for me, I really wanted to provide something different. And that changes, you know. I'm not always saying the same things, and sometimes the way that I feel changes as well. So I'm going to say something contradictory from one record to another, maybe. But but for me, it's all part of the process of learning and growing and understanding, and everything touches people a little differently. Like, for me, it's about connecting. Like, I love connecting with people, and that's the most important thing to me.
One of the things and Bruce mentioned this earlier, one of the things that I, now that I've gotten to learn some of your music now, that I really appreciate is that you celebrate everyone and all body types. And as someone who is bigger himself, like, I'm not used to ever seeing myself represented in any media, let alone queer media. And just to see, like the last year, I think you released the song Click, and you had that interactive music video.
Yeah,
and it was just really cool to see all these different types of people that you can, like, oh, you can connect with any of them. That was really nifty.
Yeah. No, and that's really what I'm trying to do, you know, and I'm not always, you know, it's interesting, but thinking about this so much, and I just wrote this new song that I'm working on. There'll be a single soon. Probably my next single is called Round in All the Right Places. It's kind of like a follow-up to Bears, you know, 4 years later. And I've been thinking a lot about it, and being married to a man who's bigger. I see it all the time. I see it every day. I see how the world interacts with him, and I see how she is represented in media or misrepresented or not represented. And it's really heartbreaking for me to see. And I've come to the conclusion that that it's really completely a construct of our society. You know, I'm not sexually attracted to thin people or fit people. Like, that's just the truth. Like, that's just, it doesn't make my penis hard. You know what I mean? Like, but I don't find thin people or fit people disgusting or repulsive or something to make fun of or something to laugh about or something to joke about or something to poke fun at. And, and so for me, knowing that truth, it makes me believe that the fact that people do that to bigger people is a social construct. The fact that you look and when you see bigger people represented in the media, it's always as a foil, it's always as a villain, it's always as somebody to laugh at, it's always as somebody falling down. You look at billboards, it's the same way. If everybody's skinny, everybody's fit, but if you see a bigger guy, he's holding his love handles because you should freeze them off or something like that. Like, they're never represented in a way that's straightforward and sexy and good, you know, and positive. And I think that, you know, you're seeing more of that in media now, and I'll be the first to say that I feel like as somebody who's grown as a person and grown as an artist, I feel like I have done this as well, but I feel like you're seeing a lot more bigger people in media, in music, in music videos, and you're seeing them as sexy, but you're also always seeing them as fun and campy and bright and colorful. You know, you're never seeing them like objectified simply to be objectified, like you would objectify a man or a woman who's fit or thin. And I think even in reflecting on my own music video, Bears, I have all of these big guys in there, and they're all beautiful and sexy to me, but the object of beauty in that video and the object of like sexual attraction and objectification in that video is myself, who at the time and in that video is super thin and fit. So even I knowing that that would sell, like knowing that that would get shared, even I am a culprit of this, which, you know, completely like, disgusts me, you know, but at the same time, it's like I also live in this world and I have to play the games of this world. I don't have to, but I chose to in that moment to try to figure out how to fix that. That's something I've been thinking a lot about.
Yeah, that was unintentional, I feel like. But even like, so there's a very funny movie called Beer City, where it's like the main character is like, oh yeah, I discovered I like beers and big guys. And like everyone's like, what's wrong with you? Like, why is this the case?
Sure.
And have you found that to be, like, have you seen that? And have people said that to you?
Oh yeah, I've seen that for sure. People are like, I don't understand it. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know why you feel that way. You know, they ask me all the time, or they'll ask me like, do you really like big guys? You know, it's kind of, I don't know what to say. Like, I don't know how to be anything other than me, you know, and I'm not going to, like, pretend to like something else so that other people will, for other people's approval, even though it does nothing for me, you know, it doesn't, I've definitely had those questions, and it's kind of interesting, like, you know, and on the flip side of the coin, especially after Bears, I got a lot of emails, and I still sometimes get emails or messages or notes from bigger guys who think it's a farce, who think I'm joking, right? And I think that, that in some ways is even sadder to me, that they think that there's no way that I would be attracted to them, right? That the image that society has placed upon the world at large, they're consuming and believing. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. We have a body image episode where it's pretty much 30 minutes of me saying that and how bad I feel about myself.
Oh, yeah.
For sure. I live that.
That's horrible. You should know in the deepest of your truth that you are fucking beautiful and awesome, and that every single type of person, man and woman, and thin and fat and and thick and fit and everything in between is going to be attracted to you. Not everybody, but a subset of every single one of those people is going to be attracted to you because you're fucking radiant and beautiful, you know? And that's just like,
aww,
own that shit, you know?
Thank you.
Of course.
Well,
Andre's getting all mushy eyed over there. I guess I need to take over for a second. So, Tom, in our time left, I wanted to be sure to mention your Kickstarter for your new album, Territories. You mind sharing a little bit about that with us?
Yeah, so I'm making a new record. I'm in the middle of this new record. It's a pretty abrupt departure for me sonically and topically. And I'm really like, I'm not sure I'm ready to talk about it all yet, but what I'm ready to talk about is that this is the best writing I have ever done. It's really engaging. It's really evocative. It's extremely challenging. And it's poetic. It's poetic in a way that I've just never been able to capture before. And I knew I wanted a completely different sound. And I have a friend of mine, Ian, who did some remixes for me over the years, and he is just wonderful and fantastic. And he's done some other amazing records that I've been a real big fan of. And he lives over in Europe, and I happen to be in Europe. And I just called him, and I was like, hey, I got this idea. Here are some demo tracks. Let me know what you think. And she was like, I love this. I love these ideas. I love this writing. Let's go to town. And this was in November. And we almost immediately started bouncing ideas back and forth. And a month or two later, you know, I had sent him, I think, three or four demos turned into 14 demos and all these crazy ideas in a really cohesive sound and an evocative story. And I just can't speak highly enough about how this is coming together. We're getting together in Los Angeles in June to record vocals and drums and a bunch of other stuff and bring hopefully we're getting a bunch of guest artists on this record as well. So I would love if somebody could go over. I describe it in a little more detail on my Kickstarter page. You can go to Kickstarter and search Tom Goss, or I have a bit.ly too, which is pretty easy to remember. It's bit.ly/TomGossGrr. TomGossGrr.
I love it.
Yeah.
And you're also still doing shows basically nationwide while you're going this, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, performing is my favorite thing. It is where I feel at home. Writing, too. You know, like I say, the most important thing to me is connecting. And so for me, the places in which I most fully connect are when I'm writing, when I'm speaking from my heart, and then when I'm speaking that from a stage to people. And so, I love performing. I love telling my story and hearing other people's story as well. And so, yeah, I have a bunch of dates on the East Coast and on the West Coast in the next couple of months, and I would super love to see you and hang out with you and give you a hug and just, like, eat a grilled cheese sandwich. Like, it sounds great.
Well, come to Oklahoma, and I will gladly see you.
I was in Dallas. I was real close. I need to come to Oklahoma. I haven't been there since 2009. I don't think I performed there since 2009. Yeah, it's a long time.
Well, come on down.
Yes, sir.
I am happy that you play in Ohio quite a bit. You have a show in Dayton in a couple months, and I'm thinking about coming too. I haven't checked the schedule and everything, but I saw it and definitely piqued my interest.
You should. I'm coming to Dayton. It's going to be really great. I'm playing and officiating a wedding in Dayton, and then we're all going to go to the bar afterwards and have a party.
Oh, my God.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
He says he's thinking about it. What he means is that he's, like, getting together all of his money so that he can be front row for everything.
That works for me. He can just go to Kickstarter and get a private concert, and then I'll play wherever he wants to, and it'll be super easy.
There we go.
Tie it all into the Kickstarter, right?
Well, Tom, thank you so much for coming on. It was an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me, and thank you for all your hard work.
Thank you for all you do to make sure everyone knows that they're beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. You are. I can't wait till you see Ron in all the right places. I haven't really talked about it. I think this is the first time I've talked about it, but it sounds super fucking dope. I can't wait for everyone to hear it.
I can't wait to hear it either.
Yeah.
Until then, thank you all for listening so much. You can find us on Twitter at OQE Podcast. You can find us on Facebook at OQE Podcast. Or even email us if that's your jam at oqepodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to like and subscribe and share us on whatever your favorite podcast platform is, whether that's Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, etc. But until next time, bye, y'all.